Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate Health Switches. My name is Raina Starr. Dorian Wallace has the night off. Well, as you know, it is the first Friday of the month. But before we get to that, I want to say hey to all our new listeners. My little announcement goes as follows. If you are new to Desperate Health Switches, please know that we are neither PG, G, or even an R-rated show. So if dirty language, bodily functions, or any other thing that might come out of my mouth might be offensive, this may not be the show for you. However, if that stuff doesn't bother you, welcome to it. And Desperate House, which is brought to you by the one, the only, the amazing Dorothy Morrison, WickedWitchStudios.com for all of your good pagan needs, and if you need it shipped overseas, check out theangrycauldron.com. They also ship her goods and have a great supply of things of their own. All right, without further ado, because you know there's just so fucking much to talk about, ladies and gentlemen, my co-host every month, first Friday, the one, the only, the pagan pundit himself, the amazing Talzin Govanin.
Hey, hey, hey. How's it going out there, mesdames et messieurs? Yes.
We got a lot to talk about, but first let's talk about what you've been doing.
What I've been doing, I have been living inside of a word processor. That's what I've been doing for a while here. I mean, people who regularly tune in know that I'm working on a new novel. It's called The Sorceress. And unlike my past work, this is urban fantasy. So it's a little bit of a casting a wider net this time than my previous extremely niche works have been. But I have finished work on the drafting of book number one, and it is at my editor's right now getting copy edited. And next it's going to go out to my beta readers. Meanwhile, I am working on the cover. I've already seen some proof concepts for the cover, and it's looking bitchin'. So while I am busy trying to turn book one into something ready for publishing, I am starting book number two in the series. I decided to throw caution to the wind and do the National Novel Writing Month, affectionately known as NaNoWriMo, and I'm doing it this year, writing the first 50,000 words in book two of the Sorceress Saga. Book two is called The Witch, and today was the first day, and I had a great morning. I wrote 2,500 words in the first chapter. The book number one came out at just over 100,000 words, so I still have quite a ways to go, but it was a very auspicious start to the next half of this project. So I just got done. I was working on my Patreon page before I came on air here, redoing my bio to reflect the new focus of my writing away from just straight up romance, or, well, nothing about the romances I ever write about are straight, but that's another matter altogether. Mixing the romance in there with some paranormal stuff and vampires and were-creatures. I mean, I'm really tired of the tired old tropes that you see everywhere. So instead of like a bunch of like werewolves in this one, you get to meet a were-roach, a cockroach shape-shifting human. And people think that doesn't sound too scary. Yeah, imagine running into a 6-foot fucking cockroach in a dark room. I think that would be kind of scary. And you know, just having fun building this world that in my own mind has already grown to something big enough to support the current 7-book series I'm working on, as well as 2 more series that are going to branch off of this one that I'll start working on once I get farther into The Sorcerer. So I've got lots and lots of stuff going on here, and I just want to let everybody out there know, no matter what stuff of mine you like, if you like my movie Dark of Moon, if you like my politics stuff on here, if you like my writing, if you like the idea of urban fantasy that features real pagans and real paganism mixed in with all the fantasy creatures, or maybe you like my YouTube channel where I'm doing a series of how-to videos for pagans and Wiccans. Whatever of my stuff that you like, however I, you know, brighten up the rather chaotic world that we all live in right now, for any of you folks out there, there is one way that everybody can support my continued endeavors. I have a Patreon page. And the cool thing about Patreon is not only do you get to support an artist by offering a certain amount of money every month. It can be as low as $1, $3, $5, but you also get cool stuff. Like if you just give me $1 a month, you will find out all the news that's happening with my books before anybody else does. Story that you will, that only my Patreon patrons will have for the next year. And then next year, I will publish the past year's story, but then send out a brand new short story, and it's a holiday short story, so it's perfectly good. If your holiday season doesn't have enough vampires in it, then trust me, you should take a look at the one I'm working on for this year. I think you'll enjoy it. But then you can do things. You can also do things like take part in online chats. If you take it, and you know, if you decide that you want to support me at a higher Patreon level of support, you can get things like personal classes or tarot readings or all kinds of stuff. So check it out. It's patreon.com/TalisonG. It looks like Talising, but it's actually Talison G. And go on there and check out the stuff. Check out the stuff that you can get for your Patreon levels, and come and join us. And also, anybody who is a Patreon patron is going to get thanked in the acknowledgments of every book I put out. So, you know, if you want to see your name in print, that's another great thing you can do. So, I'll be keeping everybody updated on the progress of everything. So come on over to Patreon. Support your fellow pagan artists trying to put some stuff together for you. Or if you just like to tune in to hear me talk Raina off the ledge every 30 days, you can support that too on Patreon.
True enough.
And I will let everybody know out there that that one of the characters in The Sorceress is named Raina, because Raina took advantage of an earlier promotion I had where for a donation you could have a book, a character in the book named after you. And let me tell you, not only is this character a principal supporting character in The Sorceress saga, but the character of Raina is going to get spun out into her own series of novels once The Sorceress draws to a close. So you never know, if you get involved in these various, artist supporting campaigns I do, you could wind up with, you know, with a character, a hip swinging cool, biracial lesbian Wiccan character like Raina did. You never know. So, but she still
Take
has red
advantage
hair.
Of it.
Yeah, and I'll
That's
say
right.
even, you know, yep, she still has red hair. So, yeah.
Get it while you can.
So definitely. Come on over to Patreon. And, you know, that's the thing, too. I have a level on there where if you support me, I think it's at the $30 level a month, you get a free tarot reading over video every month. But it doesn't just have to be a tarot reading. If you want just to sit and have me, like, over the internet talk to you and a bunch of your friends about tarot cards or magic or how to do this or that type of ritual, it's up to you guys. I mean, I say you get a tarot reading every month, but you could just have me you could sit down with the newspaper and go through stories and see if I can help you understand stuff. It doesn't matter. You know, the time is your time. So anybody who listens to us and goes, man, I really want to ask him questions, but, you know, I can't listen to the show live. I have to listen to it recorded, and they're not there anymore by the time. Well, become my Patreon patron, and you can have exclusive access where I actually even chase the cats out of the way if that's what it takes to deliver the information you need. I say that as one of my cats is currently demanding that I pet her while I talk to all of you guys, too. But, of course, I do that because it helps everything. All the political news goes down easier when you've got a purring cat on your lap.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, you know, having that kind of access to an artist or someone who's knowledgeable about a specific topic, or, you know, just sometimes you just want to talk to somebody different and get a different set of ideas. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And I will tell you that Taliesin does avail himself of the people who support him. He really does. So take advantage of it while it's offered. Because when he's famous, we don't know if we'll get that again.
Yep. people who support me, I support them right back. And that's one of the reasons why with this, you know, I've had artists and all that say, oh, well, go out and find some starving artists. You'll probably be able to get them to do your cover for free. No, I'm paying an artist to do this cover. I've hired a design team called Berserker Design, and they are a great team who works incredibly well and incredibly quickly, and I am paying them for their labor because independent artists, we have to stick together. And so if I want people to pay me for my labor, I got to be willing to do the same. And that's what I'm doing here. I am paying for the cover art. I'm paying for editing. I'm paying for formatting. This is going to be a level of professionalism that you very rarely see with independent pagan publishers, just because I came into a little bit of money through a family friend and an inheritance. I put some aside just because I got to walk my talk. If I want people to support me, I'm going to support them right back. And that's what we're doing right here.
Yep. Yep. It's important.
Very.
Arts
very.
Are not free. Yep. You got to take care of artists for sure. All right. So let's launch in.
Okay. Number one bit of political news that I found out right before the show started is that Beto O'Rourke has dropped out of the Democratic primary. And, you know, and the sound you heard right there was the sound of all kinds of political writers and pundits heartbreaking because they love Beto way more than the Democratic electorate ever did. I mean, you'll find plenty of people who'll be like, well, yeah, I like Beto. He seems like a good guy. But the thing is, he's liberal for Texas, and liberal for Texas is, like, still way more conservative than the rest of the Democratic Party. I never thought he was really going to gain a whole lot of traction. He never would have gained any traction if it hadn't been for the extreme hard-on that the traditional political press had for him. They're like, oh, my God, he's a white, cis, heterosexual, male centrist. Please bless us with your centrist, you know, wisdom, Mr. O'Rourke. And they were just chasing after the guy. I swear, if Kamala Harris had gotten half of the coverage that Beto did when she was doing twice as better than him in the polls, then her campaign would be a little bit more robust than trying to go on an Iowa or nothing strategy. Yeah, but, you know, but the one thing I will tell everybody, that no matter what the polls are saying right now, never count Kamala Harris out. The woman's a fighter. As a matter of fact, another piece of political news, we, of course, have heard the saga of Katie Hill, the Democratic representative who was the victim of revenge porn, where her husband leaked some intimate photos of her and her girlfriend. And she's a victim of a crime who wound up paying the price instead of the fucking slime who did it, because we live in a misogynistic culture that demands perfection from women while writing off everything guys do as boys will be boys. And I'll tell you, Kamala Harris was the only one of the Democratic hopefuls to fucking stand up for Katie Hill and to say how fucking wrong it was what happened to her. And, you know, that and you know, you had all these fucking guys, all these penis bears tripping all over themselves to defend the honor of Tulsi Gabbard, a fucking whack job on Putin's payroll, and yet they're not going to lift a finger to say about the incredible crime of making a crime victim pay the price instead of her attacker. You know, they were all fucking silent on it. As far as I'm concerned, any guy who defended Tulsi Gabbard while staying silent on Katie Hill, fuck them. They are not getting my primary vote in any way, shape, or form. And if they nab the nomination, I'll vote for them in November with holding my fucking nose, because that was just wrong. And these guys need to stand up for real Democrats, not fake Democrats like Tulsi Gabbard, who go on Fox News and repeat all of their fucking talking points because, you know, she's just trying to set up a third party run so she can play spoiler. And so, you know, Kamala Harris stood up for Katie Hill, and, you know, people are fucking noticing. And I'll tell you this too. Don't think that Kamala Harris would ever stop her campaign before South Carolina, because once we get out of the whitier than Whiteville of Iowa and New Hampshire, the primary goes to South Carolina next. And that's where you're going to see it, you know, that's where you're going to see, you could see things change. If Harris can pull a third place in either Iowa or New Hampshire, then I think that, you know, she could definitely be a dark horse in this. But I got to say bravo to Kamala for standing up for Katie Hill when no one else would.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
I am worried about Kamala, though. I have to tell you, my concern is that she's down enough that I think Warren is going to walk away with it.
Probably.
I'm concerned about who's
going to walk away with number two. Well, that's the thing. You know, I think Warren is going to walk away with it. I've had, you know, I've had a few other things happen recently that kind of points towards Liz Warren winning everything. I really think that what it's coming down to here is if Joe Biden doesn't win Iowa, he's done, because Iowa is incredibly white, and Iowa and New Hampshire are two of the whitest states in the entire country, which is why they should not be fucking first in the nation anymore, especially for Democrats. Come on, folks, Democrats, the Democratic Party is 45% non-white. And so, you know, when you start off a nominating race in states that are 98 and 99% Caucasian, that's not going to give you an accurate view of the way the electorate is really feeling right now. But having said that, since there are so many advantages built in for somebody like Joe Biden in Iowa, if he doesn't come in first in Iowa, he's toast. New Hampshire is going to be a beauty contest between Liz Warren and Bernie Sanders. And whichever one wins that, everybody's going to write it off as hometown favorites. Although I can say this, if Bernie can't pull a solid second in New Hampshire, at the very least, he's finished. Because let's face it, most of Bernie Sanders' support is white and extremely liberal. And when you're talking about white and extremely liberal, you're talking about the Democratic electorate in New Hampshire. If it's like Warren, Biden, Sanders at the end in New Hampshire, then fuck it. Stick a fork in him. He's done. And I'll tell you this right now. I can tell that the Sanders fans are kind of nervous, because I noticed that a lot of them on my Facebook feed are recycling the same articles. There's one article from Jacobin Magazine talking about how Bernie Sanders is like the only candidate for the working class. That one is like 2 years old, and it keeps getting recycled. I'm seeing the same articles recycled over and over and over again, because there's not a whole lot of very encouraging things coming out of the Sanders campaign right now. And there's also not a whole lot good coming out of the Biden campaign, because for somebody who is, you know, such a favorite of the establishment press, the guy is having a really, really hard time raising money, mainly because the Democratic Party has changed radically since the last time Joe Biden ran for president, which was 12 years ago. People forget he ran in the 2008 campaign and lost badly. He was only made vice president to mollify nervous white people about having a skinny black guy named Barack Hussein at the top of the ticket. But a lot has changed since then. The idea of going around to big money Wall Street fundraisers or Hollywood fundraisers and, you know, asking for big checks, that's the way Republicans do things now. Democrats go on grassroots, small dollar contribution campaigns. And it's really worked out well for a lot of Democratic candidates. I mean, instead of going around and having everybody max out how much they can give you, and then they can't give anything more a few months later, if you get 1 million people to give you $3, you just made $3 million. And you've got 1 million people who you can go back and maybe get another, you know, $3 from next month or the month after. It really, because not only does it make your campaigns much more people powered, it really is just the sensible way to go around about things. But Biden doesn't have a grassroots, fundraising campaign. And he really can't, because his whole campaign is, hey, remember how things used to be like 12, 16 years ago? Wouldn't you like it to be just like that again? And, you know, when you're running that kind of a campaign, it's really hard to embrace more futuristic things. I mean, really, to the rest of the field, small dollar contributions aren't very futuristic. It's just the way you fucking do things. But, you know, let's face it, you got to give Joe a little time. He still refers to a microphone as that machine. So he's just a little bit out of the curve when it comes to the latest technology. And let me tell you, the guy doesn't do himself any fucking favors either by pointing his finger at young climate activists and saying, listen here, child, yeah. It's like, oh, my God, put that fucking – it's like, okay, boomer, you can settle down now. And in case anybody hasn't found out yet, okay, boomer is what you say to somebody who is just acting completely clueless because you're just a little too old to be with things right now. It's something Gen Z came up with, okay. And I kind of picked it up being a Gen Xer myself.
Hang on. As the resident boomer in this situation, I gotta say that's not necessarily a fair statement, because a lot of boomers are actually a lot smarter than that. And I understand why millennials feel picked on, because now boomers and millennials are probably the two most picked on and discounted groups going. You Gen Xers and you know,
We just get left out. They don't even mention us anymore. It's like, it's all boomers and millennials. They don't even talk about Gen Xers anymore. And for us, that's just kind of like typical. But
yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. It's not so much that I think the party has changed. What I think the problem is that Joe Biden is showing his age. I think people would have been a lot more confident and comfortable with him running if he still had the same Joe spark. He's that, you know, the crazy uncle spark. Now he just looks sad and desperate, and that is the problem. You know, and listen, I was a big Joe Biden fan back in the day, but that was back in the day, and that day is past now. So we do have to look to the future, because, you know, people are like, well, you know, Bernie had that heart attack. Let me tell you something. That is something that Bernie Sanders and Mick Jagger have in common. They have a heart attack. They come back looking rested, okay? They look sharper than they were before the issue. So I've got to say, it's not about age. It's about how you carry yourself. And Joe Biden is carrying himself like a very old man, even though he is middle-aged, you know, as far as the pack goes, between Trump and everyone else who's running, you know, the average age is definitely into the 60s, because you have some folks – you know, the good portion of the Democratic Party that's in the lead right now, except for Buttigieg, are all, like, well over retirement age, okay? So I think the fact that, you know, when people try to say, oh, they're too old, bullshit, because, you know, AOC came out for Bernie. AAOC. And, you know, I mean, but it's not so much that I need to have Bernie win, because I don't, because I don't care.
Right.
I just want whoever they're going to put in to beat Trump. That's the only thing I care about. I'm not playing favorites. I'm not going to have my heart broken. I am not going to do any of that. I am going to take whatever Democrat I get, and that's
right.
the Democrat I'm running with, and I really don't give a
shit. Yeah.
I'm not worried about Gabbard, because Gabbard's not going to make it. You
right.
know, the people that – listen, I forgot all week that Julian Castro was even in this race anymore, you know?
You know?
And I'd forgotten
yeah.
about Beto O'Rourke. I'd forgotten.
And he's one of the more quality
you know?
People running. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Castro's
exactly.
great. Castro's – see, the thing is that what it really comes down to is that everybody in every generation – the, you know, once people in a generation cross that 40 mark, and millennials are almost there. The oldest millennials are like 38, 39 years old, so they're getting ready to cross that 40-year-old Rubicon. And it, what it really comes
yeah.
down to is not so much the age, but the ability to adapt, the ability to roll with a changing world and a changing political environment. That, let me tell you something,
yeah.
some of the older Gen Xers, my particular generation, are just as shitty as the regressive boomers that I'm sure you know, who, you know, still like
oh, yeah.
to act like it's 1992 when it comes to approaches in politics. I mean, older Gen Xers
sure.
can be just as bad, and the younger Gen Xers can
yeah.
be just as whatever you want to say bad about millennials, you can say about the younger Gen Xers. Which, of course, again, is why people forget about the Gen X generation so often. But we're so cynical. We're just like, yeah, well, typical. Tell me something new. But that's what we bring to the table, is self-hating cynicism. But that's another matter altogether. The thing is that, you know, you take a look at the two big progressives that are still in the top three, between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and I think you see a really great example of the difference between somebody who is able to roll and evolve and somebody who's just desperately trying to keep doing the same thing that they've been doing for decades and hope it wins this time. Because Elizabeth Warren is like, yeah, Elizabeth Warren is rocking and rolling. She is adapting to a changing environment. And meanwhile, at a talk recently, Bernie Sanders was telling young black kids, well, make sure you don't disrespect the cop and you won't get shot, even though a lot of people have been killed by cops for doing things like sitting in their living room. So, you know, it's talking about being,
yeah.
out of, you know, being able to roll with changes, to know what's different about this age from when you grew up. And some people can do it and some people can't. And that's what we're running into right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, so, but, you know, the thing is that what gets me, though, and what really one of the reasons why, you know, I mean, why baby boomers get so much shit right now, and I'm sure you know a lot of baby boomers who would fit these bills, but it's like people who just will not admit anything when they fuck up. And it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, the older people in the baby boom generation have been rolling on this whole, we were the Woodstock generation for a really long time. And what they forget is that, you know, look, it ain't the 1980s anymore. It's not like this stuff is just 20 years in the past. I mean, 20 years ago, everybody was listening to the Prince song 1999 and going, oh my God, can you believe it's actually almost 2000? That's 20 years ago for people now. I mean, this, you know, the whole Woodstock thing was fucking 50 years ago, and it, you know, damn near 50 years ago. And it's like, when reality, it's like you get good and bad in every generation, but whereas Gen Xers are always ready to accept all blame, even though it's not ours, because we've been kind of conditioned that way, being self-hating cynics that we are. And, you know, I got to tell the Gen Zers who are all talking about being self-hating and cynical, we wrote the fucking book on that, okay? When you guys come up with something new, come call me. But it's like, it's like if Gen X is willing to admit to things that aren't our fault, there are too many people in the boomer generation who aren't willing to admit the things that are. And so that's,
well,
you know, that's...
Let me jump in.
Yeah.
Let me jump in on this for a second. Here's what I noticed. The boomers that were going to vote for Trump voted for Trump. And these
right.
people are the people that are my age, a little bit older. And what I found was those people were going to voted exactly the way they were going to vote. Whether or not it was a problem or a mistake, no, you're right,
right.
they don't admit it. My problem, my bigger problem, was the number of Gen Xers who couldn't get over the fact that Bernie wasn't the nominee and freaked
oh, yeah.
out and wrote in Jill Stein, if her name wasn't, or wrote in Bernie's name, if it wasn't
right.
already on the ballot. That was, and those people, those are the people that I'm finding who refuse to apologize. They have 9,000 excuses for why what they did
oh, yeah.
was fine, and it's, and you know, we didn't present a good enough candidate. Those are the people who I am finding refuse to bend or apologize for a mistake. That's my personal experience.
Well, you know, and I saw it happen in real time, and what really happened in, when you consider that, is that so many Gen Xers were so the, oh my God, politics is so lame, both sides are just full of shit, and
yes.
all that,
yes.
that they were so disengaged
yes.
for so long that when they ran across a campaign that they were actually interested in, they repeated the mistake of the hippies. And what happened, the mistake of the hippies were the people in the late 60s who were marching for change. And when the world didn't go to peace and love overnight, they got jaded and cynical. And in the 80s, they
yeah.
became yuppies. And the same fucking thing happened with the Gen Xers. I'm not political. I'm above all that, trying to be all hip. And all of a sudden,
yeah.
they got interested
yeah.
in a campaign. And when their guy didn't get it in first try, in other words, when the revolution didn't happen overnight, they were just like, oh, fuck it,
yeah.
I'm just going to do a symbolic protest vote. Because they, you know, because they had never
yeah.
really learned anything about civic engagement. Oh, trust me, I've had my run-ins with people. And, you know, when I run into some white dude who's around my age, it's usually, that's when you get the feeling that you're talking to a fucking brick wall. Because, I mean, you get people
mm-hmm.
my age who are still pushing the whole Russia meme of the DNC rigged the primary. It's like, you know, you hear people
right.
saying that shit, they're probably a Gen Xer or a younger boomer who's like, because, you know, generations fade into each other. There's never really a clear delineation. So you get those younger boomers or those older Gen Xers, and they're still holding on to this shit. And then when you say, you know, there's no evidence, they'll say, well, you know, in court they said that this is a private organization and we can do whatever we want. Yes, that's called a fucking
mm-hmm.
political party. Political parties are private organizations. They are not governmental entities, and thank fucking God for that, because then nothing would ever change in these parties. But they are private organizations.
Sure.
They are not governmental bodies. And anything that talks about any political party in any government document is usually an organizational thing for Congress that they can change with a simple voice vote. I mean, literally, these are private organizations. And then you still see people swapping around these things saying, oh, well, if you want to feel the burn in the primaries in New York, you can't do it if you're an independent. That's right, because primaries are an opportunity for a party to pick its nominee. And, you know,
yeah.
and so members of that party go and vote on who they want their nominee to be. It's called being a part of a party. And for the, you know,
right.
and yet it's the fucking Gen Xers who are right around my age who are like taking the attitude of, well, I want to be able to be an independent so I can act all superior,
yes.
superior and up my own ass while still getting to vote for my person. And, you know, basically they want to have their way and have absolutely no consideration of anything else. And it's a spoiled brat tantrum is what it is. And if anybody out there doesn't like what I'm saying, fuck you. I don't care. I mean, literally by saying that, you know, I mean, in Ohio, we have open primaries, and that is some bullshit right there, because the Republicans are not going to have a primary, which means that all of these Trump fans could go and declare themselves that they want to vote in the Democratic primary in my state and vote for someone like Tulsi Gabbard or somebody who has no fucking chance, just to try to fuck with things. And they can do it because Ohio doesn't make you be a part of an organization in order to have a say in what that organization does. It's ridiculous. It's like saying, well, you have a Wiccan coven, you better let those Baptists tell you how to run your coven, even if they don't want to join your religion, because after all, it's their right. No, it's not. And, you know, it's like, and open primaries are fucking stupid. I'm really pissed off that my state has that, because, again, it lets people who have, who hate the party and do not have our own best interests in heart, it gives them just as much of a say as it gives me, who's been working to elect quality people my entire life. So, and again, it's this spoiled brat tantrum that people have, like, well, I want my cake and eat it too.
But the fact of the matter is that many states, if you are registered as an independent, you can vote to do the same thing to the Republicans. And I know a huge swath of people in North Carolina who are registered independents, who are more than happy during primary season to go in and vote for whoever would have been running against Trump to fuck with that process. So it is a two-way street in a certain regard.
But I don't think that it should go either way. I think that parties are parties, and if you want to have a say in who a party picks to be their nominee, then join the fucking party. It doesn't cost you a dime.
Oh, I agree.
It doesn't take a minute out of your day. Yeah. And,
right.
and like,
I mean,
even though we can fuck with them,
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, I'm a liberal. And I'm, you know,
right.
and I'm a member of the Democratic Party, because that is who I would caucus with, period. Because that
right.
is the closest to my ideal that I have available. Again, make the decision not selfishly, but based
right.
on what is good for the republic as it stands. So that's why I make the decision. You know, as an aging boomer myself, I realize
right.
and have seen firsthand the folly of not doing things in a semi-traditional way whenever possible. There are reasons why institutions are set up the way they are. There are reasons why the institutions have not changed. Not all of them are good, but not all of them are bad. So
right.
in essence, if you want to support whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be, help build the fucking party.
Right, exactly.
I agree.
And, you know, and you know, when it comes right down to it, I mean, that's the thing, too. It's like voting is not, you know, where, you know, if you, the only person saying they're going to give you a pony is Vermin Supreme. But I'm saying that, you know, voting is not a thing where you vote and you get everything the way you want to. Part of it is harm reduction. Part of it is the fact that, you know, look, I'm a heterosexual, cisgender white male. I have, you know, all kinds of privilege oozing all around me. I acknowledge that. And, you know, when I vote, I keep in mind all the people who don't have that privilege, my friends of color, women, LGBTQ, any type of people who do not have the privilege I have. I consider, you know, it's like, yeah, I could sit around and hold my breath and say, well, until you nominate somebody whose campaign slogan is abortion on demand without cost and without apology, which is my position, then I'm not going to support you. But the fact of the matter is that me doing that would help contribute to abortion even being more restricted, because the people who want to
right.
protect what we have wouldn't be able to get in. But, you know, that's the thing. It's like some of us decide to put on our big person pants and go vote like an adult, and other people want to have a hissy fit and say, you know, mine, I want. And it's like, you know,
right.
it's like, folks, you don't really do much for your candidate when you act like that, because it's like, wow, if this is the kind of person this candidate's attracting, I think I need to look elsewhere. And if you don't believe me, go and check out the Facebook feed of anybody who says something nice about Tulsi Gabbard. You're going to find some weird ass shit on there, I guarantee you.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But yeah. beta was out. And, you know, personally, I would love to see if all of the white het cis men dropped out, because we need a woman to clean up this mess. That's my personal opinion. But that's something that people have heard me say before. The fact of the matter is that we have no idea what the electoral landscape is going to look like next year, because of the fact that the impeachment freight train is leaving the station and it's gaining steam. And let me tell you something. You get a lot of people who will be like, who cares? Republicans aren't going to vote to convict in the Senate. I've got something to say on that, but let me first say something else. The thing about open impeachment proceedings and an impeachment trial is the fact that all of the shit that has been coming out in drips and drabs over the last 4 years of criminality, of corruption, of outright thievery from, you know, people in the executive branch, it's been dripping out slowly over 3.5 years. But the impeachment hearings and the impeachment trial is going to lay all of it out at once in front of the entire country. And yeah, you're not going to move those 23% of Americans who are pissed off that we had a black guy running the country for 8 years. You're not going to convince them. You're not going to convince the Nazis and the Klansmen and all of the other Republican Party regulars these days. But the thing is that it's not the 23%. It's the 77% that we've got to convince. The people who sat on the sidelines thinking that their vote doesn't count. The people who sat on the sidelines thinking that, oh, both sides are bad, they're all crooks, yada, yada, yada. We got to lay it out in front of everybody. Because you know what? Even if we're still running against Trump when November of next year rolls around, it doesn't matter, because it's not just Trump we're running against. We're running against the entire fucking Republican Party. The Senate is up for grabs now. As a matter of fact, even the boring old fart, late Gen X, baby boomer type pundits, the people that you and I listen to and go, oh my God, what fucking decade are you in? Even they're starting to say, oh yeah, the Senate is now officially up for grabs. Because even in areas that lean red, these senators are not doing too good as far as their approval ratings go. And so, yeah, if the Senate decides to vote to not convict Donald Trump, we get to hang that vote around every single neck of every single member of the Senate. And it may not help in Louisiana, but it can help in a lot of other states. And next year is going to be a wave election. We had a blue tsunami in 2018. We are going to see another tsunami next year, because Trump's actually going to be on the ballot, and that's going to pull all of, you know, a lot of the people on the left out. And so that can, you know, that can take a race that's close and tip it blue. So, you know, that's why impeachment is so important, because we have to take the entire government. We have the House. We're going to keep the House, but we need to take the Senate. We need to take the executive. And because that is our way of fixing our political system, because the political system is broken. The Republicans have shattered it, because we've got a two-party system where one of the parties is not interested in campaigning. They're only interested in protecting rapists and stealing money and kidnapping children. That's all the Republican Party stands for now, defending racists, stealing money, and kidnapping children. And, you know, we've got to annihilate the Republican Party. And let me tell you, we annihilate the Republican Party, and we're not going to have one party rule for very long. Like I said many times, the Democrats are a very loose coalition. I could easily see that if the Republicans aren't around scaring us into sticking with the party, if they're gone, we could wind up having things radically realigned in this country. But the first step is kicking the Republicans out of power. And that's what impeachment is going to help us do, to not just take the executive, but to take all levels of government. And then we can get stuff like Medicare for all. Then we can get stuff like an increased minimum wage. Then we can get stuff like real legal protections for people that aren't just dependent on court rulings, but actual legislation, something that actually hasn't really happened in Washington in a very long time. Real legislation to help people, but we have to get the Nazis out of office first. And since the Republicans are throwing their support behind Donald Trump as an institution, we can just call the Republicans the new Nazi party. Because Donald Trump is a Nazi sympathizer, and what's another name for a Nazi sympathizer? A Nazi. And if they threw in their support with him, then guess what, guys? You get to be the brown shirt. And I'm not exaggerating. It's not hyperbole. It's literal fucking Nazis, okay? That reminds me of something I saw on the internet recently as a little funny aside about things that we didn't think we were going to have to be saying in the 21st century. Scientists in the 90s got to say things like, hey, we mapped the genome. We cloned a sheep. Scientists in the 21st century are like, okay, look, guys, first the Earth is round. So it's a little different of expectations there. But still, it's like, we've got, you know, the Republicans have decided to sign on to this suicide pact with Donald Trump. And since that seems to be their wishes, we just have to go ahead and help them with the self-immolation of their party by completely ripping them out of power. And let me tell you something. When January of 2021 rolls around, if you've got the entire government in the hands of Democrats passing things like Medicare for All, you're going to see the Republican Party tear itself apart. The racists are going to claim that they weren't racist enough. The religious nut jobs are going to claim that they weren't nut jobby enough. The rich guys are going to be like, we didn't hate poor people enough. I mean, they're all going to blame each other for this. And that's going to be a lot of fun to watch personally for me. But, you know, it's like because this is like a real clown car going on in the other party. Only this clown car is filled with the kind of skit. This is the Republican clown car has become a car full of Pennywises from It. OK, it's like a clown car, but it's a terrifying one. And we've got to take the wheels off of it. And that's part of what impeachment brings us. And let me tell you something. If what I've been hearing is true, and the people who've been doing these closed-door depositions, if their testimony is half as explosive as what I've been hearing from some of the friends I have who work on, like, political staffs and all that, then, boy. I mean, as bad as anybody thought it was, it's worse. So it's just we have no idea. And here's another thing I want to remind the people. The killjoys who are like, you know, always saying, oh, it doesn't matter, nothing ever changes, blah, blah, blah. First of all, you know, stop snorting Xanax. It's not a good look. But also, there's a story floating around that says that Republicans are saying privately that if the vote for impeachment for conviction in the Senate, if it was a secret vote, they would have more than enough votes to kick Donald Trump from office. And then whenever anybody shares these articles, people always comment saying, yeah, but it'll never happen, so why talk about it? The little thing I want to clue everybody in on is there's absolutely nothing in the Constitution that says they can't have a secret vote in the Senate. Nothing. All the Constitution says about impeachment is that the House brings the charges, the Senate holds the trial, and the Chief Justice is the judge for that trial, and you need 2/3 to convict and remove a president from office. That's what the Constitution says. Anything else, any procedures, any way of going about it, whether or not they tell anybody who voted which way, it's all up to them. It's all up to the Republicans in the Senate. And let me tell you something. Yeah, a secret vote would be a cowardly way out, but look at who we're talking about here. These people are so cowardly these people are so cowardly, they make Scooby and Shaggy from Scooby-Doo look like fucking Rambo. I mean, that's how cowardly these guys are. These guys have spines made of jelly, and there's a lot of them, especially ones who are facing tough re-election campaigns, who have no idea what's going to hurt him worse, being seen to want to remove Trump from office or to be seen as wanting to back him up and keep him in office? They don't know which is worse for them. And, you know, and that could play in. They could decide to have a secret vote if they want to. And I wouldn't put it past Mitch McConnell. So that's one thing to keep in mind. They could decide to make the final vote be a secret vote, and that way everybody could say whatever they wanted to. They're speaking in front of a crowd that loves Donald Trump. I voted to keep him in office, and those damn people took him out. Speaking in front of a crowd that hates Trump, I, of course, wanted to get that asshole out of office. It's a win-win for them. They get to talk out of both sides of their mouth, which is really what they like best. So I wouldn't put it past them to have a secret vote. So there you go.
So let me ask you a question. You know, obviously the impeachment is moving forward. The rules were voted on and passed, all that great stuff. But more than half of Americans want not only the impeachment, but impeachment and removal. You don't see that as a possibility.
It could be. See, that's the hell of it. It could be. And I'll tell you this. If the mood in the Congress is that they would really like to get rid of this ferret-wearing, orange festoon shit-gibbon that they've had to deal with, I wouldn't put it past Mitch McConnell to decide to hold a secret vote. I wouldn't put it past him at all. The guy is fucking jelly spine as it is. I mean, literally, they have the balls of a newborn baby. So it's just like, or the ovaries of someone with a hysterectomy, if you're talking about one of the women. But it's like it could happen. You see, the thing is, the one thing to remember in the Trump era, whatever you think is the way Washington normally works, forget it. Down is up, up is down, black is white. We, as Kevin Costner said in JFK, we are through the looking glass here, people. There is anything is fucking possible. I mean, I never thought I'd see a president so fucking stupid that they'd send the vice president, the person who's supposed to be, you know, there in case of emergency, break glass, and rope him in on the fucking illegal extortion racket in Ukraine. Mike Pence delivered the ultimatum from Donald Trump that either you investigate the Bidens or you get no military aid. I mean, you know, even past administrations where there are things of questionable ethical content going on, they always kept the vice president out of the loop, usually because, let's face it, the vice president is, you know, kind of worthless until the president stops breathing or they need to break a vote in the Senate. But, you know, they've always tried to keep the vice president out of the loop. So in case something happened and the president had to take an early retirement like Richard Nixon did, they'd have someone ready to step in. The thing is that by the time they're done with these impeachment hearings, they could be having a dual trial, which, again, nothing says they can't do it. They could have a dual trial with Donald Trump and Mike Pence up on the chopping block at the same time. So, again, you know, it's like anything that you think, you know, anytime people say, well, the conventional wisdom says, they're talking out of their asshole, because the conventional wisdom when it comes to partisan politics in Washington, the conventional wisdom rule book is read even less often than people actually, you know, read those little tags that you're not supposed to tear off your mattress. So it's, you know, they're, again, don't say anything's impossible. Literally nothing. We could be looking at having a campaign next year to succeed President Pelosi. You just have no fucking idea. And if you think the Republicans wouldn't want to do that, think again, because let me tell you something. They want to run against Nancy Pelosi, something horrible, because they don't have Hillary Clinton to run against this time. And so they've been trying to make Nancy Pelosi, you know, a liberal demon in the country's minds for decades now. They'd much rather run against Nancy Pelosi. And if she were sitting in the Oval Office, they might figure that would be easier. You never know. I mean, again, nothing is impossible. Just remember that.
That's amazing. I don't trust Mitch McConnell to have a secret vote because I don't think he has the guts to do it. I think he is as spineless as Lindsey Graham in that regard. I mean, you know, when you call Mitch McConnell evil, you know, he kind of smiles like Cheney, you know, and it's kind of like you say that like it's a bad thing. And so, you know, my idea of Mitch McConnell, you know, I remember thinking that there could be nothing worse in life than Dick Cheney, and I was fucking wrong by a lot. The amount of damage, here's the thing, I don't ever want to test fate like that again, even in my mind remotely. So I'm not going to say that Trump is the most evil thing that could possibly happen, because quite frankly, I don't know anymore. That's how fucked up this has me gotten, or has gotten me. So I, you know, like, I won't even put it out there like that, because guess what? If there's worse, I don't want to know. I'm too afraid to find out, as I'm sure many people are.
Yeah, well, you take a look at, think about this. You know, that's what we've got to stop. We've got to stop assuming that the Republicans have a bottom to bottom out. Because after Dan Quayle, people thought, well, they can't get any dumber than that. Then we got Sarah Palin. And after Palin, people thought, well, they can't get any dumber than that. Then we get Donald Trump, who is literally has to be told to stop drooling on himself. I'm convinced of this. Okay, so again, never assume that there's a rock bottom for the Republicans to hit, because you never know. Their next, you know, their next big candidate could literally be David Duke. It's like you never know. As you know, and let's face it, there's nothing dumber than Klan people. Klan people are so stupid, they probably, you know, if they see a sign that says wet floor, they'll pee their pants. That's how stupid white supremacists are. Because let's face it, folks, if the thing you're proudest about is being born white, then I think you've made some severe career and life choices that were very bad in the past. But yeah, it's like, you know, every time we think, oh, well, it couldn't get any worse, don't fucking say that, because you're tempting fate. You know, it's like, you know, I'll say, you know, well, it can't get possibly get any better than Barack Obama. As far as the president, Barack Obama's the best we had. It couldn't get any better. Hear me, fate. Hear me. Couldn't get better. Prove me wrong. You know, it's like, oh, my God. Yeah, oh, my goodness.
Never give people the opportunity to say, hold my beer.
Exactly. Oh my God. Because it's over and over again. Yeah, never give our culture the ability to say, you know, hold my beer and watch this. I mean, literally, and yet the thing is that the veneer has fallen off. That's one of the weirdest things about the current political climate in this country, is that the veneer of sanity that we used to have to try really hard to superimpose on our politics, that entire veneer, literally have people who, you know, were like accusing, you know, people of being too sensitive to everything, all of a sudden get their knickers in a twist because people booed Trump at a baseball game. And oh boy, wasn't that delicious? Especially the look on his face when he realized that they were booing him, and the smile went away, and Melania got to go back eye fucking all the guys in the dugout and all that kind of stuff like that. Have you ever? I mean, literally, Melania has this look on her face, kind of like she thinks she knows you. She thinks she's seen you from somewhere, but isn't quite sure where. But still, it's like, you know, just the way the smile faded and the chance of locking him up, I just thought that was fucking hilarious. But, you know, that's what happens when a politician like Trump gets taken out of his bubble, because he's lived in a bubble. He's lived in a bubble where he's hanging around with sycophants in the White House. And when he leaves the White House, he goes and talks to his pre-staged Klan rallies, where, of course, they like him, too.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that they're so careful to stage manage everything. I mean, most of the places where Trump's been having rallies have been half empty lately. So they make sure all the lights are out before Donald Trump can see the crowd, so he doesn't see how many empty seats there are. They make sure that the cameras are placed in the only area that's going to make the hall look full, even though behind them, shit tons of empty seats, so that when Trump goes and looks at the tape later, all he sees are adoring crowds. And yet when the guy walks out of the bubble to go to a baseball game, that's reality. That's the fucking country that he's the president of right now, is the country that hates his fucking guts. And let's face it, we never got to this level of support for impeachment for Bill Clinton. We only got to this level of support for impeachment of Richard Nixon about a week before he resigned his office. We have never seen impeachment numbers this high before. And literally, to get 51% of the country to agree on anything is a fucking miracle. And yet to agree on impeaching and removing from office, and again, Republicans are cowards, and right now they're afraid of Donald Trump and his base, because they've basically played the political game to the point where if they don't have the Republican base, they've got nobody, because you get no black people who are going to vote for them. A lot of women aren't going to vote for them. Latinos, the fastest growing demographic in the entire United States as far as voting population goes, they're not going to vote for Republicans. They have signed on to this Make America White Again ethos in the Republican Party, to the point where even though there are some of them that would really like just to tell Donald Trump to go fuck himself because he's getting in the way of them making more money for their corporate cronies, they can't. They got nowhere else to turn anymore. And you can see the record number of resignations going on amongst Republicans in Congress right now. It seems like every other day somebody's announcing that they're not going to seek reelection. Some of these Republican House members have only been in there for like 4 years, 5 years, and yet they're announcing that they're not going to run again, because they're seeing, you know, they are the ones who have a clear eye. They see that they're on the Titanic and there's a couple of lifeboats left, and they're trying to get off before you're left, you know, just hanging around listening to the band play until you drown, which is where the rest of them are going to be left if they don't jump ship pretty soon. So, I mean, again, as someone who's followed politics my entire life, it's just bizarro land right now, just watching what's going on. And just, you know, and the thing is, though, is that I'll tell you, I feel kind of vindicated because back when the 2016 election first happened, I said that there are a bunch of career people in government, good people, nonpartisan people. Some people are hired under Democrats, some people are hired under Republicans, but they've got a job to do, and they do their job very well, these lifetime civil servants who make the government actually function. Unlike a lot of people in the intelligence community, they know everything that's going on with Donald Trump. They're going to leak this out. They're not, you know, they're going to stand up for the country. And, you know, it's kind of weird because after Michael Wolff's book Fire and Fury came out, I found out that a lot of the information leaks that I had been attributing to intelligence community professionals were actually Steve Bannon and Rince Priebus and Jared Kushner all leaking against each other, trying to make each other look bad. And so I was just kind of thinking, God, you know, where are the career civil servants who are going to stand up for the nation? Well, we're seeing them now. They're the civil servants who are standing up. They're going to testify in these impeachment hearings. And they're ones that you can tell they're being leaned on to not cooperate with Congress. And you can tell who those are because they're the ones who get called to testify and they quit their job the day before they go to testify. So in other words, Donald Trump is trying to obstruct justice by pressuring, you know, civil servants with their jobs if they go and testify. So you've got people who are resigning their jobs just so they can go and stand up for this country, just so they can go and be patriots and put their asses on the line for the rest of us. So the lifetime civil servants are here, and they are coming out at just – I'm serious. It's like that scene in Endgame when all of a sudden all the portals open up and all these extra people come out. And that's all I'm going to say because I don't want to spoil it in case you haven't seen it. But that's what's going on, only instead of like Warriors from Wakanda – they're like the CPAs and the ambassadors and the assistants to ambassadors, assistants to these secretaries in all of these various areas. I mean, you saw one woman whose name escapes me at the moment. I had it written down, but of course I left that notepad downstairs. But in the day after, you had like men saying, oh, I don't know if I can testify. She fucking walked across the square. She walked right up the steps into the Capitol, went in and fucking testified for 10 fucking hours and laid everything out about the Trump schemes with Ukraine. And we're seeing that over and over again. People who took a pledge to preserve protect and defend the Constitution of the United States actually doing that. And so that's, you know, someday when the story is written, you know, these people deserve to have their own monument wall in Washington, the people who stood up for this country when a lot of other people were too fucking afraid to. So, you know, I feel a little vindicated because those people that Trump likes to write off as the deep state, you know, the people who actually do their jobs and know how to fucking do them, these people are standing up for the country, and we owe them all a debt of gratitude. So that's what I'm going to say on that.
Cool. Wow. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Damn.
Yes. Oh my God. And
wow.
Yeah. It's you know, big things are happening. I mean, this is history level shit here, people. I mean, this is historic level shit that's going on here, both in the bad and in the good that's happening. There's some real stuff going on here that someday, you know, people are going to say, man, what was it like when it was all going down? It's like when I talk to people my parents' age about, you know, what was it like when it was all going down with Watergate and all that stuff? Because I was born in 1970. You know, my only thought of politics at that age was, you know, who was going to, you know, change my fucking diaper or something like that. And I would say, you know, what was it like? And they'd be like, man, it was weird. We didn't know how this was going to turn out. We didn't know what was going to happen. And it's like, holy shit, we're at the same place right now. And it's just, on one level, it's fascinating to see history play out. And on the other hand, since we don't know how it's going to play out yet, it's a little nerve-wracking. No wonder so many states are starting to legalize weed, because even people who used to be against it are like, oh, fuck it, give me a bong hit, just because of all the shit that's going on right now.
Wow. Yeah. Oof. I can't even keep up. It's just like every day there's something else.
Oh, my God, yeah. And then you hear about the fucking, Kansas, where they were literally, the guy in the government was literally keeping track of women's periods who went to Planned Parenthood using a spreadsheet.
I thought that was Missouri. Wasn't that Missouri?
Missouri, okay. Missouri, because there's a Kansas City for both Kansas and Missouri. I can never keep the two straight. But, you know, it's like Missouri, yeah. Well, that's the thing, too. I have some friends in Missouri who are like, oh, yeah, go ahead and blame Kansas for this. They're fucking crazy. Go ahead and blame Kansas. No, okay, it's Missouri. But, yeah, it's like that's just creepy. I mean, it's one thing to be like, you know, these are bad guys. These are like fucking the Empire from Star. That's just creepy. I mean, that is like the guy who sends women an email asking for their used panties. I mean, it's just creepy. But that's the Republican Party. It's the party of rapists and Nazis. Literally, you know, it's like, you know, a Republican could fucking rape someone's daughter and the party would not demand that they resign. So it's like, it's just, and we're going to hear more about this, folks, because let me tell you something. The creepy people are running the Republican Party right now. Yeah, you know, the old Republican Party that people like you and I grew up with, the people who I call the Bob Dole Republicans, they're gone. I mean, they left town when Donald Trump got the nomination. Anybody who was a Republican who has even a shred of honor has left that party. People like Joe Scarborough and George Will and, you know, all of those folks, Bill Kristol and all that stuff. These folks, you know, I may not have agreed with them, but at least they had the honor to say, yeah, no, this guy doesn't speak for me and I'm leaving the party because of it. And so they're gone. The people who are left are the fucking pedophiles and sexual assaulters and Klansmen. So we're probably going to hear a lot more creepy stories like this coming out about Republican elected officials. So, you know, so folks, remember, that's another good reason to vote Democrat straight down the ticket, because at least they're most likely not a rapist. They may have taken some questionable photographs sometime in the past, but they're not a rapist, most likely, because we tend to chase those people out of our party.
I mean, gosh.
I know, really? You feel like you need a shower after watching you feel like you need a shower after watching the news sometimes. It's like...
I know.
But, you know, you can always watch Rachel Maddow because she, you know, because Rachel will give, like, one look after she reads something, and that just, like, that sums up every emotion you had about whatever weird story. She'll give you that one look at the camera like, huh? And it's like, exactly, Rachel, you read my mind.
Oh, yeah. It's insane. It's also exhausting. I can't even keep up half the time. You know?
Well, I know. It gets emotionally exhausting after a while. Even just being outraged at things gets exhausting, which, again, why I emphasize to people so much that you always, always give yourself a break. When you feel overwhelmed, give yourself a break. I don't care what that break is. I mean, recently when I felt overwhelmed, I put one of my favorite cheesy-ass movies, Air Force One, starring Harrison Ford. That was on one of the streaming services I subscribe to. So I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll watch it. Get off my plane. That's the kind of president I want. It's like I lost myself for 90 minutes in an empty popcorn film. But it's okay. You know, if you want to lose yourself in a trashy Harlequin romance, it's okay. You know, if you want to sit back and watch Friends reruns and remember when politics was sane in the 90s, even though in the 90s we didn't think it was that sane. But, hey, perspective. That's okay. You know, whatever it takes for you to give yourself a break, to relax. You know, sit down, pet a cat. Breathe some fresh air. Go out for a walk in the autumn foliage if you're in an area where the leaves have turned and are falling. Whatever it takes to give yourself a break, give yourself the time. Because, again, we need people in the resistance, but we need you whole. We need you sane, and we need you to not burn out because it's still a long road. I mean, remember, the 2020 election is 1 year away. I mean, think about it. It's November 1st. It's almost exactly 1 year away. So we've got a year of this shit, okay? We've got a year of more stuff to deal with. We've got a year of more bullshit flying around. So just give yourself a break, and don't just go and scroll on social media, because if your social media feed is anything like mine, you're not going to get away from it. You're not going to get any away from it. My Facebook feed is filled with all kinds of people either freaking out or whatnot over things. Which, tell you the truth, again, lately I've been like hanging out on Twitter. So people, you know, I haven't been posting to Facebook a whole lot. So if anybody wants to come and hang out, come and hang out with me on Twitter. It's my Twitter handle is @Taliesin_G. And come and hang out because I do post about some political stuff on there, but I also post jokes. I post stuff about my writing. I'm hanging around with a bunch of writers now that NaNoWriMo is going. We're all like, you know, encouraging each other and spurring each other on to write more words and all that kind of fun stuff. So if you want to hang out on social media, you might want to come over to Twitter because not on Facebook a whole lot these days. Because when I'm scrolling through my feed, it's either like, I know, I know, I know, or it's like, oh my God, you're fucked up. Oh my God, you got this wrong. Oh my God, you know, at the various things rolling by from people. And that gets exhausting too. So it's like, you know, that's why, you know, sometimes I'm just like, no, I'm going to go write about my vampires. they're a lot more, you know, I'd rather write about real bloodsuckers as opposed to the metaphorical bloodsucking that's going on in this country. So folks, take care of yourself. Take some time. Let some steam out. You can feel good about it because it's kind of like recently I wrote on Twitter saying that since social media is such an important part of any independent writer's promotional package, that all the time I spend on things like Twitter is fucking work related, goddammit. Well, so too, you know what? If you decide that you want to go and see Rise of Skywalker when it comes out in the theaters, just to give yourself a break and to relieve yourself of the politics of the day, fucking do it. Besides, it looks epic as all shit. The fanboys can fuck themselves. I looked at that trailer and I'm like, oh my God, shut up and take my money. Just fucking shut up and take my money. I've got to see this movie. Ray is like probably my my second favorite character in the entire Star Wars universe behind Han Solo these days. I love Rey. You know, it's like, give me... She's awesome. I don't care if they've got emo Darth Vader on there too. I don't care, because Kylo Ren serves a purpose. Although I'll tell you, there is actually a video I would recommend by Lindsay Ellis, one of my favorite YouTubers. She has a video called "The Political Philosophy of the First Order," in which she takes a look at Kylo Ren and kind of takes a look at him as a metaphor for a lot of young people in politics these days, starting out idealistic, getting cynical, trying to find their center again and all that stuff. And it's a fascinating video. Definitely check that out. Again, YouTubers talking pop culture is one of the ways that I decompress. So as a matter of fact, Brent, I was thinking of you earlier today. I know your time in the punk rock / new wave field. We've talked about your time in the punk rock new wave scene. Well, one of my favorite YouTubers, a guy named Todd in the Shadows, has a show called Train Records, which is about albums that were so bad, such a disaster, they killed careers. And his latest episode is about Cut the Crap by The Clash. So I would recommend going and checking that out, because I forgot how fucking bad that album was until I watched that video.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, too funny.
Oh, yeah. And as a matter of fact, if anybody out there are a fan, because I'm a reader, and I've had the experience of having some of my favorite books turned into god-awful movies. Everybody's had that experience if you're a reader. There's also a guy named Dominic Noble, who has a series called Lost in Translation, where he talks about books that have been adapted into movies, talks about what they changed, what they kept, and what they left out altogether. If you're a story nerd, I highly recommend Dominic Noble's channel, because trust me, you go on there and when he talks about like Lord of the Rings and what they kept and what they left out, you're like, yes, that's right. Oh my God, I forgot about that. They left that out too. So it's a lot of fun. I step any more on YouTube if it's not Rachel Maddow, I'm watching pop culture stuff, because again, you know, kind of knee deep in the politics stuff all the rest of the time, and I'm just gonna sit back, smoke a pipe, and watch something fun. Like tonight, when I get off of the phone here, I'm probably going to go downstairs and try to talk my wife into watching the pilot of Batwoman with me. I haven't watched the show yet. I've been kind of busy. But
I have to know your opinion. I love it.
That I've been hearing from the very same lesbians who got me to read the Batwoman comic almost 10 years ago. And told me that it was right up my alley. These same women are going, oh my God, Ruby Rose, Batwoman, fucking awesome. So I've got high expectations for it. Haven't watched it yet. It's Greg Berlanti. Everything the guy does is fucking great. Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Riverdale, that's another Greg Berlanti. Love, Simon, that movie, that's another Greg Berlanti flick. So again, the guy does really quality stuff. I've got high expectations for it. But, you know, again, folks, take care of yourself, because we need you sane.
Absolutely. Well, my friend, do you want to repeat any of your stuff from the beginning before we sign off for the evening?
Yes, sounds good. Yes, remember, you can go to, if you want to support me on Patreon, it is patreon.com/TallisonG. And for as little as $1 a month, you can get exclusive access. I'm going to start posting any videos I do are going to get posted to my Patreon first. And you'll get that too for the $1 a month. I'm redoing my Patreon. Anything on the support tiers that you like, let me know, because I'm going to be changing some stuff up there. But, you know, hey, $1 a month, you get early access to my videos. You get exclusive access to my yearly holiday short story, and you get to support a pagan doing stuff that pagans can read and not tear our hair out because it's so fucking clueless. And it's like, and for as little as $1 a month, less than a bag of Cheetos. I think I'm worth a bag of Cheetos. Maybe not hot Cheetos, but at least a bag of regular Cheetos. So, you know, go on over there. And also keep an eye out, coming up at some point here, I'm not sure exactly when it's going to come out, I'm still in the process, but book one in the Sorceress saga, The Sorceress, is going to be coming out soon. And keep an eye on my social media, because I'm hoping in the next couple of weeks I'll be able to do a cover reveal so you can see the image that I'm going to be putting on the book, as well as on bookmarks and all kinds of other fun stuff. So patreon.com/TalisonG, you'll find it all out there first.
Awesome. Well, Talison, on that note, I'm going to say this was an amazing episode. I really appreciate you hanging with me and giving me the 411. I'm starting to feel a little better, but, you know, Trump is still president, so... You know, next month you could be talking me off the ledge again. You never know. But
there
anyway,
you never know.
All right, folks, we're going to call it a night. Sis and I will be back next week with Kelly Dawn, and we hope to see you there. Talented, once
and I will
again,
see...
thank you, and we'll see you next month.
I will see everybody out there. Same bat time, same bat channel. Catch you later.
All right. Okay, guys, we're going to wrap it up early tonight, and we will see you next week. You go ahead and have a wonderful weekend. Hope the ancestors are with you. Blessings to all. Have a great night.